official record.
No.
No.
I was careful not to.
Oh, that's too bad. I would have.
Thank you.
Open the House Committee on Health Care.
Yep, this is it.
Ben, where are you going?
Is Julie supposed to be here?
I thought I had a quorum.
Well, you did for a second ago.
Just for a second.
Is Bill coming?
Did Julie tell me that she's not going to be here today?
No.
Do you want me to go get him or?
Well, we can stand at ease.
Did you? Well, we didn't.
A work session on House Bill 3135.
And Mr. Chair, I just remind the committee that this bill was an attempt to allow providers who participate in the Oregon Health Plan to take advantage of the state's deferred compensation plan that state employees can use to set aside pre-tax dollars for retirement income. So we're hopeful that there's a way to move it forward, but understand there may be challenges.
And Mr. Lurie's in the back for PERS and has told us that under the law we could conceivably do something for those who were in the fee-for-service reimbursement side but could not for physicians employed by the fully updated health plans because they were not employees of the state and therefore weren't qualified. So the question is, okay, how about the 20%?
So, yes. For the record, my name is Judy Moore Peterson. I am the Director of Medical Assistance Programs with the Oregon Health Authority. And very briefly, the -1 amendments to 3135 actually did limit it to just providers under the fee-for-service system. We still have some concerns with the bill because of the way that the Medicaid rules read for payments to providers that request that or that require us to make a full payment to the providers and that we report that income to the IRS. In this case, in order to receive those federal matching funds, we would not then get the federal matching funds for that portion of the payment that would go into the deferred compensation.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question? I know we don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but have you looked at the way other states, we know, we heard testimony that Mississippi operates this program. How do they deal with this issue? Presumably it's the same for them as for us.
Right. And we still have to look into exactly how they were able to work that particular mechanism. We have not had an opportunity yet to figure the details of that out. It would require us to make some changes to our payment system, which is not set up to track the payments in this way and to link in with the deferred compensation program. So it would come with a fiscal. It's just a matter of how much and to what degree, depending on whether we were able to obtain federal matching funds or not.
One follow-up, and then I'll be happy to let this go on
for its now.
Very way. But what percentage of the state's Medicaid dollars are being spent on fee-for-service versus MCO?
Careful now.
Where are we?
It's going to require a different answer than I heard the last.
Where are we on that?
The actual payments, and this would be just to the actual doctors, I don't actually have a percent on the to the doctors. It's not 40%, though, Representative Greenlee.
Just doctors, but doctors, nurse practitioners.
Correct. The bill, the way it's written, also it requires it a direct payment to them, and quite a few of those doctors use a third-party administrator or bill through a clinic. So there's some other technicalities or technical things that we would want to have addressed in order to accomplish that goal.
Mr. Chair, I think given the narrow scope of this bill as amended, given the fact I think we're trying to move away from a fee-for-service model on our Medicaid patients, and given the fact that there would likely be a fiscal associated with implementing this program, I'm happy to pull it now and come back to this perhaps in a future. Thank you.
I really would like you to try and, I mean, if we could get something like this that would give physicians who accept Medicare or Medicaid or other patients this ability to get this as deferred compensation, I think it would be great. And we can find a way to do it.
We're happy to look into how other states have done it and do some more research on this.
Great. Judy, thank you very much. And thank you for bringing it to us. Closing the work session on House Bill 3135 kills it for the session. I'm going to carry over House Bill 2505 until Monday. I'm going to carry over House Bill 3519 until Monday. We're going to do the Dash 6 amendment, work the Dash 6 amendments to 2100 and then carry it over. And can I hear you?
Yeah.
Well, should we keep 3344 alive next week or end it now?
We don't have a fiscal or a revenue on the bill yet.
I see. So we're not going to be able to.
Well, the question is, are we going to work it in the interim, or are we going to try and do something now? Because we are definitely going
to
work it.
I would like to move it now if there are the votes.
If
there are not, let's work it in the interim.
We don't have the ability to work it now, but I will carry it over. So we're going to carry over House Bill 3344 until until Monday. We will carry over House Bill 3137, hoping that we won't need it because we have Senate Bill 99 passed out of the Senate and are trying to get it passed out of the Senate committee and are trying to get it out of the Senate to us so we can work that, and I think that may be possible. So carry over 3137, and hopefully we'll have Senate Bill 99 to work. I would like to did I announce carrying over 3409? I think I did.
You did, but you can always do it again.
If I did not, we'll carry over 3409 until Monday. I would like to open a work session. Representative Cannon needs to go to another meeting, and Representative Doherty needs to leave about a quarter to four, so we're going to try and do some of these things that need votes now.
I have to leave at four.
You need to leave at four?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's open a work session on House Bill 2224. Mr. Chair, can I have a motion on 2224?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2224 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussions on House Bill 2224?
Do you want me to refresh the memory?
Why don't you do what?
Refresh the memory.
Sure, refresh the memory.
House Bill 2224 requires covered entities to report annually on system safeguards for protecting confidentiality of individually identifiable health information. The bill has a sunset of January 2nd, 2014. There's no revenue impact and a minimal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, Representative Widener has a question.
Representative Widener.
I'd almost like to hear from the hospitals one more time on this. This was a CEO bill, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there anybody here from the hospitals?
If they're
tell us
interested.
Why CEOs are afraid of this bill. That may not be the way
I know.
To put it.
Well, the thing I had, and I mean, I wonder if we're hitting the right person with the CEO that shouldn't be the information, which would be your CIO and EIO?
Well, it simply says that the CIO has reviewed it with those people, with his subordinate and her subordinates, and is comfortable with what he heard from them. But.
Chair Greenlick and Chair Thompson and members of the committee, I'm Andy Easton, the Director of Advocacy for the Oregon Hospital Association. And I believe the bill was heard either late last week or earlier this week, and somebody else on our staff did the testifying. We do oppose this bill. We do believe that there are plenty of safeguards in place that CEOs are responsible for, including on the including the patient and personal safety protections of their identifiable health information. I believe that it was also testified that by signing one of these declarations, it would make the CEO responsible and therefore liable for civil lawsuits.
Yeah, intention was to make him responsible. You have that right. Whether you think if they are telling the truth on it, they're then still liable for lawsuits?
Chair Greenlit, to make sure I understand your question, are you asking?
This is my bill, so I'm a little cautious about how I ask questions.
Right.
But it seems to me if in the course of their job they say and sign they have reviewed their safeguards of patient information, and if they have found any shortcomings or there were any breaches, they have reported them to their board and to their auditor, that somehow makes them liable for civil action?
We believe that. That does. Opens that up, that liability to them.
And now they wouldn't be liable for civil action if there was a breach, that there was a suit. They wouldn't be named in it, is your sense now, unless they had filled out this form?
If I understand your question correctly, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, I believe that by signing this, it puts the liability on the shoulders of the CEO. By not having this, it makes the system or the facility liable.
Well, there was civil action against Ken Lay and Enron when his argument was, well, but the CFOs were responsible. I didn't have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was without this bill. Somebody gets sued, they get sued. Does somehow you think this will increase their liability?
My belief is yes, it will.
If I may, I'm just wondering if maybe we set it up where if they were reviewing the data with the CIO, to where it held the CIO responsible and not the CEO, because these systems become very complex. And I know people who write security systems and couldn't even begin to fathom how somebody would break them, and you kind of put your trust in them. So I'm just wondering if we have this organized and are going to be addressing it properly with this, or if this would give them some sort of liability coverage if they did sign the bill. Hey, I went through it with my guy. I'm signing off on it. If I sign off on it, now it falls into his lap because I was trusting him to bring me this information. See what I'm getting at?
My sense is that's what it says. So,
Chair Greenlick, may I also attempt to address something that I think Representative Widener is getting at? In a system, in a larger healthcare system that has multiple state hospitals, for instance, Peace Health, who carries hospitals in Washington as well as in Oregon, it would be a little ironic or maybe not quite appropriate to have, for instance, Mel Pine, the CEO of Peace Health in River Bend, to sign this paper for the whole system, when it should possibly be Alan Yorty, who is the system-wide president. So I think there's some language in there that might be confusing and not appropriate for larger systems as well.
Okay. Is there any other questions?
I have one.
Yep.
Thank you. I guess the question I have is more, I don't know that you could answer it, so maybe it's triggering, like if it's your bill. Do we do the same thing at the state level? Somebody came to my office, for example, and was talking to me about pharmacy stuff one time, and something they said triggered a bill that got passed in the last session where we got some database for meds. So if I get, my information is now in that database, does that person at the state level have the same authority that, or I mean, the same accountability that we're asking of the private sector?
No, in fact, it caused me to vote against that and fight against it.
To have the same accountability?
Yeah, there is no accountability in that system, in my mind. That's one of the dangers. We're all going to have, we don't need to talk about that. We'll talk about that a different day. But we all have our data in that. Probably everybody in here will have their data in by the end of 2 years. And there is no accountability.
So does whoever? So we don't have something that's comparable, I guess, is what I'm asking. We're not,
no,
we're not
going
to require somebody of the state to have something comparable, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Your point is that system should be safeguarded, and it is not safeguarded. I'm trying to do it on this. I failed to do it on that one, and we vote no here. We'll probably fail to do it in the hospital and health insurance system. But that system you're talking about is a very dangerous system and does not safeguard the information. Okay, you ready for vote? Representative Doherty?
Well, I guess I just have a concern. This goes back to the concern that I brought up before, is I'm not quite sure if it's just strictly on the CEO or whether also the board of directors has equal responsibility. And I don't think that's in the bill. And so that's a concern that I have. I think the idea of this is very, very good. I'm not quite sure if it goes far enough. So.
Well, next time we can bring the Sarbanes-Oxley does exactly that, bring the boards into reporting their responsibility as well. We could do that. We could expand it next time. Please call the roll.
Representative Doherty?
No.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Hoyle?
No.
Representative Weiger?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Kennerer?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenland?
Aye. We have 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bill fails. Close the work session on House Bill 2224. Open a work session on HJM 19. I need to get a vote on these bills while I still have to say, if you don't mind, I'm losing some committee members shortly.
Okay.
I think this is this the last one?
Well, we got to do the public hearing.
Okay, I'm sorry. Open a public hearing on HJM 19.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJM 19 urges the United States Department of Health and Human Services to include all federal FDA, Food and Drug Administration approved prescription contraceptive drugs and devices to prevent pregnancy on the list of women's preventative health care services. There's no fiscal or revenue impact on this bill, Mr. Chair.
I'll give you 2 minutes each. Let's go.
I'm going. Chair Greenlicht, Chair Thompson, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today on HJM 19, the Birth Control Matters Resolution. My name is Rowie Thorpe, and I'm here on behalf of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon. We support HJM 19 because it's very important for Oregon to send a message to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services about the importance of family planning and effective birth control. This resolution requests that as the federal government designs a benefits package to implement health care reform, that DHHS include all the FDA-approved methods of prescription birth control drugs and devices with no copays. Increasing access to birth control so that women can use what works best for them and reduce the number of unintended pregnancies is an important public health goal. We believe and hope you agree that every woman should be able to choose and consistently use the birth control that works best for her without cost getting in the way. Currently here in Oregon and nationally, cost is a major factor in consistent use of prescription birth control. Copays for birth control pills typically range between $15 and $50 per month, and for other methods, such as IUDs, copays and other out-of-pocket expenses can reach into the hundreds of dollars. Research shows that more than one-third of American women have struggled with the cost of prescription birth control at some point in their lives, and because of cost, have used birth control inconsistently. The numbers are even more dramatic
among younger women, with more than half mentioning a time when cost made it difficult to use birth control consistently. Increasing access to prescription birth control will help reduce the number of unintended pregnancies and keep women and children healthy. Half of all the pregnancies in the U.S. are unintended. The United States has one of the highest rates of unintended pregnancy among the world's most developed nations. Covering birth control without copays is one of the most important steps we can take to solve this problem of unintended pregnancies. And by doing so, it also dramatically reduces abortion, since behind almost every abortion is an unplanned pregnancy. Research from the Guttmacher Institute shows that two-thirds of U.S. women at risk of unintended pregnancy who use contraception consistently and correctly throughout the course of any given year account for only 5% of unintended pregnancies. It should come as no surprise, then, that most women having abortions were either not using any contraception, using a less effective method, or were using the method inconsistently. In 2000, the most recent year for which data are available, almost one-half of abortion patients were not using any contraceptive method in the month they got pregnant. And among the 54% of abortion patients who were using some form of contraception, the overwhelming majority acknowledged that their use was inconsistent. Consistent, correct use of contraceptives comes close to eliminating the risk of unintended pregnancy. Making contraceptive methods easier to obtain and use is eminently sound public policy. Planned Parenthood asks for your support of HJM 19, the Birth Control Matters Resolution. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, Chair Thompson, and members of the committee. My name is Tanya Chuprov, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you today in support of HJM 19, the Birth Control Matters Resolution. I work as a clinic manager for Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette. PPCW serves approximately 60,000 women, men, and teens each year at our 11 health centers. 2,000 women visit a PPCW health center each week. 95% of all patient visits at PPCW are for family planning and women's health care, including birth control, annual exams, STD testing and treatment, HIV testing and counseling, and safe sex counseling. Our health center staff discuss all birth control options and help women select the birth control method that is best for them. And each woman has a different need when choosing a method. In working at the Salem Health Center, where 92% of our patients are low income, we see women all the time who cannot afford their birth control. Just the other week, a mother and her daughter visited our health center. The mother was paying for her daughter to attend college and could not afford the $35 monthly copayment for her daughter to go on birth control. Basically, she had to make a decision between buying her daughter books or birth control. Ultimately, they only purchased one pack, and on the way out, I overheard the mother talking to her daughter about switching to a cheaper method or using condoms. Only our patients can decide on a birth control method that works best for them. Birth control methods are not one size fits all. A method that's perfect for one woman may not be perfect for another. In this case, the mother and daughter had to choose school over birth control, and we never saw them again. It's critical that all FDA-approved methods of prescription contraception be included as women's preventative care and available without copayments under the new insurance law plans. I would have loved to see the mother and daughter return to our health center so the young woman could choose the birth control that works best for her and reduce her risk of unintended pregnancy. I ask the committee to pass HJM 19 to urge the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to recognize birth control as a woman's preventative health care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, Chair Thompson.
Very brief.
Oh, yes, and members
of the... I think we can pass it if we do it right now.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, Chair Thompson, members of the committee. My name is Ann Branson. I am here today to testify in support of House Joint Memorial 19 because for years, birth control has been a very important part of my basic preventative health care. I'm 22 years old, and I'm proud to say that I'm a native Oregonian. I grew up in Seaside, where I did not have access to a Planned Parenthood health center. Fortunately, I was covered under my father's insurance. When I needed access to family planning services, I went to my local nurse practitioner. Due to my uncomfortable, irregular monthly cycle, I chose to go on birth control to control and regulate it. When I moved to Portland a few years ago, I had to select a new healthcare provider. I had several friends tell me that Planned Parenthood was a place for young women like me to go access quality and affordable birth control. So I decided to visit my local Planned Parenthood health center. I'm still covered under my father's insurance. I was able to afford my copay for birth control at that time. But after living in Portland for a few months, I had to move to a new home where my rent increased significantly and my budget got tighter. I don't earn a big salary, and I found myself struggling on a monthly basis to pay my birth control. It may sound hard to believe, but it's true. Some months I had to choose between paying my bills and rent and my birth control. I believe that it's absolutely crucial that this resolution pass. This will make a huge difference in my life, and I believe fully covering prescription birth control is the best way to prevent unplanned pregnancy. That is why I'm asking you to support House Joint Memorial 19, the Birth Control Matters resolution. Thank you.
I hate to tell you this, but passing this memorial is not going to change your life at all. There may be lots of other reasons to do it, but it's a memorial. Any questions? Close the public hearing on House HJM 19 and open a work session on HJM 19. Any discussion? I do. I would like a motion. I
thought you would.
I would. That'd be
Mr. Chair,
very good.
I move HJM 19 to the floor with a be-adopted recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves HJM 19 to the floor with a be-adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? To the group. I just want to make sure we have as many people voting as possible. That's why I'm rushing this. Not that we don't think it's an important thing to do.
Just give her a bedtime.
Brief comment, though?
I think that this is important, and in the discussions that I've had with people, this is one of the issues, prevention of unplanned pregnancies, that people who are pro-life, people that are pro-choice, that we can agree on, that stopping unplanned pregnancies helps stop abortion, and I think especially in this session, the more things that we can do where we can bring opposing sides or traditionally opposing sides together, the better this again, we're doing this all across the country to get the message that birth control should be part of preventative health care.
Will you please call the roll?
Representative Doherty?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Boyle?
Aye.
Representative Wagner?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Kenner?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenlee?
Aye. HJM 19 passes. Who's going to carry that? Who's this is your proposal?
I think Nolan.
Representative Nolan? Great.
Yep.
Let's ask Representative Nolan to carry it.
Yep.
Close the work session on HJM 19. Thank you for your testimony. I'm sorry I cut you off, but I think you got what you wanted. So. That's even better. Are we ready for a vote on HB 3613. Open a work session on House Bill 3613.
16?
I'm sorry, 3616, and ask for a motion on the. Tell us what it is, and then we'll get a motion on the dash ones.
Right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3613, we heard on Wednesday, it defines mastectomy for the purpose of the statute requiring health benefit plans coverage of mastectomy and services related to mastectomies. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have a dash one amendment that modifies the current language in the bill that says tumor or cyst in breast, and it changes that to breast tumor suspected to be malignant. We do have the fiscal and revenue on the dash one amendments. There is no impact with the dash ones, and there is no revenue impact with the dash ones, Mr. Chair.
And as I remember, we had no opposition.
With the amendments, we have no opposition.
Okay. Representative Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3616, dated 4/14/11.
Mr. Thompson moves to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3613.
Sorry,
3616. 3616. I don't want to give a different number. Dated 4/14/11. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Is there any objection? The amendments are adopted. Representative Thompson?
Chair Greenlick, I move House Bill 3616 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 3613 to the floor as amended. I'm sorry, I said 3616 this time.
You said 3613.
Some number or other. 3616 to the floor with a as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I got a few bills that you can move if you just want
what
to say
number
numbers.
What number do you want me to have in my subconscious?
Could we take a recess?
I'm going to take one of my own. Could you please call the roll on 3613? 3616-1.
Yes. Repeat it twice.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative
Quail.
Yes.
Representative Weiner. Yes.
Vice Chair Cannon.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cannon.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Yes.
Yes. House Bill 3616, as amended,
excellent,
passes, and we'll ask Representative Hoyle to carry it on the floor.
Thank you.
Close the work session on 3613. Okay. Thank you, Representative Cannon.
We could have done this one. Oh, we still have
I think we're okay.
Yeah, we
have a quorum. But let's do Representative Berger's. Who's and then she can go home on Friday, which is always a good thing.
She's got Berger, long ways to travel.
I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3185, and we're not ready for it, but let's hear about the Dash 1 amendments. We'll adopt that, and then we'll be able to get it ready for next week.
You want me to go ahead?
Please.
Members of the committee, Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20, and I will be brief. It's actually the Dash 3 amendments.
Correct.
Yes, that's what
If you recall, this was a bill I am trying to get at the issue of impaired drivers and trying to find some standards that are evidence-based around testing the specific driving skills and who is and determining who is impaired. In doing this, you have to work closely with state agencies that have important interest, and I have been working with ODOT on this. There are two amendments before you. The Dash 2 is more directed at ODOT and asks them to specifically adopt certain things and then do a work group. I really like the Dash 2, but it has this little thing called a fiscal. So my favorite amendment at this point is the Dash 3. It is less directed at ODOT about what they will do and more directed about a study group to look at the current program and what evidence-based things are out there and basically report back how they could amend this particular program to get more, shall we say, evidence-based science into determining who is impaired and who is not. So it is the Dash 3 that I would like very much for you to amend and request that you pass this bill. It is less than what we started with, but it gets at my main issue, which is as we age and as the roads get more crowded, there are more and more people with impairments, and they aren't necessarily related to age, mind you. There can be lots of reasons for impairment. This is not about being old. It's about who's on our highway and what their skill sets are and whether they have impairments that endanger us all. So I would ask your indulgement on the Dash 3 amendments, which has no fiscal. And I'm happy to answer questions.
I remember university president responding to a federal request for him to provide a list of his faculty broken down by age and sex. His response was, he knew several who were broken down by alcohol, but not necessarily. So, apropos your...
That's good.
The Dash 3s are a gut and stuff?
Yes, they essentially are a gut and stuff, and basically describe who would be it directs ODOT to put together a study group on this. Okay, and who would be on it? There was some talk. We've got a very short timeline. I would like to get some more language about periodic and episodic impairments in here that I don't think would change the fiscal on that, and I could do it in the Senate.
Goodness.
There was also some discussion about whether law enforcement should be on this study group, but that might add to the fiscal, but that we could do those things in the Senate if need be. I'd like to get it off your plate, and that's why I came down today to talk about it.
I was involved in the original bill that got them involved. I think this is will move us in. Is there any questions about the Dash 3 or about the bill with the Dash 3? Okay. Thank you very much. We have a work session?
Dr. Therese?
Yeah, I'm going to open the work session. Do I have a work session open?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, an amendment on the Dash 3s, please.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3185, dated 4/11/11.
Representative Thompson moved the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3185, dated 4/11/11. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Is there any objection? Okay, the Dash 3s are a part of it. We'll get what the fiscals and revenues that we need on the Dash 3s, and it'll be back.
I will Monday.
Carried over until Monday.
Correct.
I will close the work session on House Bill 3185. Open up a work session on House Bill 3311. Administrator, will you help us through that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3311. We had a public hearing on March 23rd. This required the Oregon Health Authority to explore ways to improve the health outcomes for women of color and to report to the legislative committee in February 2012. We have the Dash 4 amendments that basically replaces the original bill. What the amendment does is defines and specifies qualifications of a community health worker, and it defines doula. It also directs the Health Authority and the Office of Multicultural Health Services to explore options for providing or utilizing doulas and community health workers in the state medical assistance program. Mr. Chair, the original bill had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We have a no fiscal impact if the committee chooses to adopt the Dash 4s. And no revenue impact if the committee adopts the Dash 4s, and we have gotten approval from the co-speakers to rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means if that is the committee's direction.
Well, is there any general discussion on this before we have a motion on the Dash 4s? Mm-hmm. Representative Thompson?
What's the bill number?
3311.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3311, dated 3/10/11.
Representative Thompson moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3311, dated 3/10/11. Is there any discussion on the Dash 4s? Is there any objection? The Dash 4s are part of House Bill 3311. Representative Thompson.
Did Representative Canada want to vote on this?
He's probably not going to be back until we lose others, so
okay.
I think he'll be okay.
Chair Greenlick, I move House Bill 3311 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 3311 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Borey?
Yes.
Representative
Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Yes.
Representative
Wagner?
Aye.
Co-Vice
Chair Hanlon?
Excused.
Co-Vice
Chair
Hanlon?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenlee?
Aye. House Bill 3311. Passes, and we'll ask Representative Kotek to carry House Bill 3311 on the floor, and we will close the public hearing, the work session on House Bill 3311. See if we can pick quickly through some other things so I won't be making a fool of myself any more than I have to. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2100 for the purpose of an amendment. Let's have a motion on the Dash 1.
Which one did you say? Which bill?
2100. The Dash 6 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 2100, dated 4/11/11.
Representative Thompson moves the Dash 6 amendments to House Bill 2100, dated 4/11/11. Is there discussion? The Dash 6 amendments are the ones that take out things about age and a variety of other things, but leave in that the so-called death squad amendment, that death panel amendment, that leaves in the amendment that says the decision cannot be made solely on the basis of comparative effectiveness research. It's Mr. Gardner's in the audience and others, and apparently there's no problem with the dash sixes on it. Jim, you want to nod? Nod wisely? Good. Very impressive.
Was that yes, there are problems with the dash six?
Yes, there are no problems. Are there objections to the dash six? Dash six is a part of 2100, and we'll be carrying that over until
Monday.
Okay, and the work session is closed on House Bill 2100. I'll open a work session on House Bill 2726 and ask Mr. Nelson, Mr. Donovan to join us. This is the hookah bar. We do have two letters, Sandy, in opposition?
Oh.
Is that right, or
on
one?
On the original bill, I believe.
No, on this bill. I think I have. I heard there was somebody. Is there somebody who wants to speak against it? Okay. No.
The American Cancer Society has a letter.
That's
there's
what
a letter. And then there's a letter from the fire marshals in today's packet as well.
Okay.
For the record.
Phil?
Co-chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the American Lung Association. We've worked with the representatives of the smoke shop owners to craft an amendment that I believe restores the original intent of the smoke shop exemption from the Indoor Clean Air Act, while at the same time preserving the investment that existing smoke shop owners have made in their businesses. And if I could give you just a brief description of what I think the amendment does. First,
we won't be able to move the bill anyway, so we'll move the amendments as long as we have the votes and then carry it over till Monday.
Terrific. Yeah, understood. So what the amendments do, five things basically. First, it creates a grandfather clause to allow the existing smoke shops to continue their operations. And in an effort to prevent a flood of new applications, the amendment says that an application had to be received as of December 31, 2010, and then all applications have to be through the Oregon Health Authority process by July 1 of 2011. So there are some that are in the queue, they're given an opportunity, but we don't want, you got to cut it off at some point or else folks might see some sort of opportunity. And this idea is very similar to how the cigar bar grandfather was crafted back in 2007. Second, the grandfather clause allows a smoke shop for the ownership to change. So if somebody passes on or needs to get out of the business for whatever reason, they're able to move, but with certain conditions. And the main condition is basically that smoke shop and its new ownership have to recertify with the health authority. And secondly, it allows a business to move. Now, from our perspective as the American Lung Association, we want to reduce the number of people that are exposed to smoke and secondhand smoke. So we were concerned about there being moving from one location to a very large location. And so I think we've reasonably accommodated each other's interests in establishing that a business can move, but it can't go into a business that's larger than 3,500 square feet. Now, if that business is at the 3,500 or larger, then if they make a move, if a lease runs out, business burns down, whatever be the situation, that they could only move to a location that's not more than 10% larger than their current location. So there's some conditions upon ownership and moving, but I think it basically allows people to continue to operate and to maintain the investment that they made in that business. Mr. Co-Chair, you have a member.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
One question, and I've not had a chance to actually read that amendment yet, but I kind of knew what the context was. But sideboards for selling the business? Is there anything in there that says I can't transfer the ownership of the business? Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be precluded from selling it or passing it on to their kid or any of that kind of
that,
thing?
That is exactly what this co-chair Greenlick, Representative Parrish, that's exactly what the amendment's intended to allow. The third thing that the amendments do is while the health authority still has the ability to inspect smoke shops, which we think is entirely appropriate to prevent underage smoking from occurring, the legislation directs that recertification only occurs every 5 years. Currently, that's an annual requirement. This would expand it out to 5 years. Fourth, the bill is amended to ensure that these smoking lounges don't, or smoke shops don't, morph into cigarette smoking lounges. So there is a requirement that cigarettes may not be smoked in the smoke shop unless that business establishes that 75% of its revenue is from the sale of cigarettes. And finally, violations of the law are increased from $2,000 per month to $4,000 per month. And there's a belief and a concern among existing smoke shop owners that the existing fine is too small to discourage businesses from operating outside of the law. And so that was why that change was made. Finally, I would just put on the record that this would maintain all of the provisions that will allow a retail smoke shop to have smoking for purposes of sampling, which we believe is also in the original intent of the legislation. So I hope I didn't get too far off script there, Mark, but I think that's a decent explanation of what the amendment does.
Well, we all can do it.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Mr. Co-Chair, Co-Chair Thompson, the members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing the Oregon Hookah Association. We have worked...
Just say with a straight face.
Yes, sir. We have worked very, very hard on trying to, first and foremost, from our point of view, is to protect the investment of these small businesses who have gone out and expended a tremendous amount of money, while at the same time recognizing some of the concerns of Mr. Donovan and his client. And I think we've protected that investment. We allow for the transfer. We allow for that license to move, very similar to what happens with a liquor license. And it's, I think, a good agreement that recognizes both sides. And we're happy to endorse it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
I do have to leave, and I apologize for that. But I would like to commend both of you. I am very anti-smoking, hate smoking, don't think anybody ought to smoke, but I also don't think you should take away people's businesses that are already established. So I truly appreciate, because I know it was a stretch for both sides. And so I appreciate you working towards language that at least curtails and what I believe was the intent in the Indoor Clean Air Act, yet without precluding current businesses that have been in business for a while from this. So I commend you both.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ready for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2726, dated 4-14-11.
Is there any discussion? Any
add to that, if you don't mind. I think the state probably screwed up in letting these folks have their business. When all said and done, they could have probably just said no and not taken the fees and the application and made these folks jump through hoops. So I'm glad we're protecting the business piece. I agree with Representative Doria. Mm-hmm. The smoking thing makes me nuts. But I also grew up in this culture, so you know, we have one of these in our house. It's not foreign to me. So I do appreciate that y'all worked out the difference in bringing this to us. So thank you.
I do too. Yes.
Mr. Chair. I feel weird adopting these amendments because here we're helping a business, but we're also creating a monopoly for a business. We're making two sides happy. I see it being a win-win, but it just seems kind of weird with this amendment that we're bringing forward to do what we're doing, because we're saying, okay, these businesses are okay, but nobody else can go open a business. So that seems a little strange to me, but if this is what the two parties came to agreement on, it's probably something we'll be dealing with later, I would think, and then we may want to get a legal opinion on it possibly as well, because there might be some legal issues with the state saying, okay, just five of you can do business here, or 10, or what, I don't know what the number is, but there might be some issues there.
Yes, Representative.
I agree with Representative Widener, but I think in this particular instance, our choices were not good because we could continue to allow proliferation of hookah bars within the existing law, which obviously didn't take any legislation. Our other choice was to take potentially millions of dollars worth of investment in the private sector done legally and throw them out on the street, which wouldn't have exactly been fair. So given all the options, I'm holding my nose and supporting legislation that kind of keeps everybody happy and whole without going too far off the out in the weeds.
And I say I strongly support this, this compromise. I don't think it was accidental at the state. I mean, I think the hookah bar was a response to a state statute that we passed, and a legitimate response. I think we had an obligation to say, "Oh, we didn't mean it.
Yeah.
You guys go away." There was just too much of a personal investment. It just didn't make sense. So I definitely support this. Would you prefer a roll call on the amendment? Are there? Why don't you call a roll on the amendment?
Yes.
Representative
Parrish?
Yes.
Representative
Boyle?
Yes.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Co-Vice
Chair
Cannon?
Excused.
Co-Vice
Chair
Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Chair
Aye. Amendment passes. Dash shoes are part of 2726, and we will carry that over until Monday, where we hope we will have fiscals either Monday or Wednesday. But Monday now, where we hope you'll have fiscals for the Dash Shoes. And thank you both very much for your work. Good work. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3164. And could you give us a review on it? And is Michael Morris here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3164, we had a public hearing on the bill March 21st. The original bill expanded required health insurance coverage for professional counselors or marriage and family therapist services to be included and provided by the health benefit plan. We do have a replacement amendment that replaces the original measure, directs the Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules establishing standards for the approval for insurance reimbursement purposes of outpatient service providers that do not contract or subcontract with the authority or a community health program that provides treatment for chemical dependency. It authorizes the authority to set application fee or certification fees, or both, for outpatient service providers that apply for the certificate. Declares an emergency effective on passage. And I believe the department is here to explain why they need this authority.
Please, is the department here? Explain it to me. And one of the questions we'll have is, does this solve the original problem? I'll be happy to.
Okay. Co-Chair Greenlick and Co-Chair Thompson and members of the committee, my name is Mike Morris, and I'm the manager for the Quality Improvement and Certification Unit with the Addictions and Mental Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. And what these programs, there's approximately 50 of these programs across the state. They're private mental health agencies, and that in statute prior to the passage of the Mental Health Parity Act directed our department to establish standards and then certify these programs for the purpose of insurance reimbursement. And when the Mental Health Parity Act passed, it eliminated all the language that gave us the authority to approve these programs. So this was identified, came to light earlier this year when we were questioned by one of the licensing boards regarding our authority to approve these programs. We got DOJ opinion, and we were told that our authority was removed when the Mental Health Parity Act passed. So this language is essentially to replace, put back into statute, the language that was originally removed.
The original question had to do, as I remember, with a problem of an agency, services inside an agency by a non-licensed person or something. Would this clear that up because you can approve the agency as a...
Co-Chair Greenlich, I believe that this would resolve the issue because part of the purpose of our certification was that they'd be eligible for reimbursement.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We don't have the pass on this yet, but we can adopt the dash one, so... Yes, sir.
Is it possible to hear from Mr. Powell since he had concerns last time?
He's here. Where is he hiding? There he is. Mr. Powell, do you want to... Does this one give you heartburn? Thank you, Mr. Kinnaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Greenlech and Co-Chair Thompson, members of the committee, John Powell representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Mr. Chairman and members, that the first hearing on the bill, I have not had a chance to digest these amendments, but at the first hearing on the bill, we did have concerns about the reinstatement of the automatic insurance reimbursement proposal for these clinics. And as you'll recall in the testimony, many of the providers are not licensed providers, and that was the issue at the time of the passage of the Mental Health Parity Act, and that language was deleted at that time. And the concern we had was quality and being able to certify the quality of those programs.
Will you take a look at this over the weekend? I assume you have an objection to the main bill. This is a gut and stuff, right?
Yes. So
it would be good if you had a chance to comment on the...
We will look at them.
...on the dash one amendments to see if you still have trouble. And we'll just leave it. We'll just close the work session right now.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to come back to it. We will close the work session and carry it over until Monday. Remember again, Monday and Wednesday, we might go till 6. And the reward for that is no committee on Friday of next week.
Perfect. That works.
So I will close the work session, carrying it over on House Bill 3164.
Do you do me one favor before you return?
Do what?
Do you do me one favor?
I will do you any favor. It's your birthday.
Oh. I hate to use that up on this. Oh. I would like you to repeat all the carryovers before you adjourn.
Excellent. Why don't you guys go on?
Yeah.
We're carrying over House Bill 3409.
You got to go.
House Bill 3185. No, House Bill 2505. House Bill 2100.
There's a two-hour delay.
House Bill 3519. House Bill 2726.
All right. We'll
House Bill 3164. Oh, yeah.
I know.
House Bill 3344.
Again, bright and early.
And House Bill 3137. Until Monday. And remember, we have to have all our work done by Wednesday. Then we can get serious about other things. Any last comments? Thank you all for your diligence. Have a good weekend. We're adjourned. You.